So this is a really interesting one for me, because usually the lady sat in front of me now, we're chatting away during a massive big event in Liverpool, or we're building up to a big event. I wanted to sit down with her on this podcast and talk a little bit more about something I know she doesn't like to talk about, and that's herself. I've got Claire McColgan with me, of course, Culture Liverpool, we know her from. She's brought us Giants, she's brought us parties, she's brought us parades, she's brought us global stars to the city of Liverpool. She's about to be a dame, she's got a title to her name. but she's been with us in Liverpool for nearly three decades, and she's kind of created a cultural powerhouse in this city. I'm right in saying that, Claire, aren't I?
Well, Spirit is kind. There's lots of people who've done that, but I've probably been around through all of it. So you've got the thread that kind of goes through all of it. But there's lots of people who've done that journey. You know, nonetheless, the cultural organisations have been here a lot longer than me. So, you know, it's great, but there's been lots of people who've behind.
You'll find through this podcast as well, she doesn't like bigging herself
up. Just a bit odd, isn't it? You just don't.
I know. But we're going to try and beat you up as best we can. People are interested.
Okay.
Tell me what your title and what it is that you are right now.
So at the moment, I'm Director of Culture for Liverpool, which I've been for a long time. And I'm also doing a bit of work for the Combined Authority as well as Associate Director. So I do a couple of days a week from them, which is looking at what the cultural offer could be across the region, aside from just Liverpool. But I'm doing that as well. So it's great.
If you could sum up what you do, kind of day to day, how would you sum it up in a few sentences?
I think it's just making Liverpool as competitive as it can be in culture, because we're good at it. You know, it's got just walking up here, it's busy, isn't it? It's changed so much in the last 30 years, but there's always people on your tail. So it's always about what's the next thing that we could do, what's the next big thing, but also how do we keep the support for the cultural organizations and all the stuff that happens day in, day out in the city going. So I think that's probably the two things that I do, and then think of ideas. And what's brilliant is when you get to my age and you've been around so long, people do listen to them. And some of them are completely bonkers, but some of them come to light, and that's what we end up seeing. So it's been a privilege, really.
I suppose for you, and I see it with you, every single day is just so different, because, and we're going to talk about some of these things, you could be setting up COVID test centres to then the next day or the next year setting up global festivals, you know, working with internationally renowned artists, as well as that kind of looking after, I don't know, the inner workings of a local authority. And every day must be so different for you.
It is, and I've never been bored. I think that's the key thing for me, apart from one January where I came in and went, oh, there's nothing happening this year, then something big did happen. I can't remember when that was, but I've never been bored here, because there is something to, it is very different every year, and there's always something that comes along, and it's what you choose, don't you? You either choose to make the most of it and go for it, and luckily I've got a team who go with that, or you just run away from it. And I think we've always run into things in Liverpool, because it's the sort of place which I think respects that way of working. And whether you're working for a local authority or whether you're working for, you know, an arts organisation, that's kind of the right attitude to have, I think. And I've got a brilliant team who've been with me as long as I've been here. And we just love it. So when you love what you do, you don't get bored, but there's always something new, and it's kind of how you make the most of it. I really do hope we'll never do COVID testing again, though.
Yes,
probably wasn't probably, you know, wasn't the highlight of my career, but it was needed. And I think those skills that you learn by putting on major events, they came into their own in some ways during COVID, because we kind of knew how to do it. But yeah, I hope we don't ever have to go through that again as a city.
Yes, fingers crossed.
That 5 years ago, ever, isn't it? More or less today.
Crazy, yeah. 5 years this week. For me, and I'm going to big you up, I'm going to big your team up as I say this as well, but I think it kind of flows right through Liverpool. I've always said you and the team make things happen, and that kind of seeps through, and Liverpool makes things happen. And I remember when they said Ukraine couldn't host when they won the Eurovision Song Contest, so it went to Sam Ryder and it was going to be the UK. I knew on that moment when that was announced that we would have Eurovision, and I'm telling you that as a fact, because I knew we've got Claire McColgan and we've got the Culture Liverpool team. They are going to fight for that to happen, and you did. Do you understand what I mean by that? You are...
I think the city had gone through a bit of bad time at the moment. I mean, we had five commissioners in the council, so you either jump at these things, or you can't. Again, it's like, do you go run into them, or do you run away from them? And I think with Eurovision, it was so Liverpool. It's such a Liverpool thing. And that mix of doing it, I've said this loads, but because we were doing it on behalf of another country, it brought all those lovely. I mean, we can party, can't we? So Liverpool is a loud city that can just, that has got a massive personality. So if we just won Eurovision as the UK, we would have hosted it brilliantly. But the other side of Liverpool that people don't quite always see came across loads in Eurovision, because it was about that compassion and about doing it on behalf of someone else. And I don't think it's anywhere else in the country that's got that dual kind of personality, if you like. So, and I think that's what people saw when they came here. They saw us taking a back seat in some ways, and it absolutely being about a country that was at war, and that was really important. But it was a really tough bidding process, and I never think we're going to win anything. I'm rubbish at it. I'm rubbish at judging it. But I think the BBC saw a team that would work with them, and that they looked into our eyes and we looked into their, and we only had 6 months, so it wasn't like ages, and they knew that we'd make it happen with them, and we did. But it was a kind of really big team effort with the BBC as well as us. But I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of everything we'd learned, like in 25 years, came together for Eurovision, and the city came behind us. And because they knew we were doing it, it's a bit like when we did COVID, when we did COVID opening for festivals. You've got to try, haven't you? And people don't mind you failing. I think the problem is if you pretend that you're not failing as well. So I'm always one for taking, you know, we will take risks all the time with what we do. But you've also got to admit when you get things wrong. And I think Liverpool kind of gets that a bit.
We don't often get things wrong.
Oh, no, I've done a couple or two.
Should we talk about some of them?
We don't go over them again, though. No, we do get things wrong, and we listen. And it's very difficult now, and with social media as well. That's changed. In the time that I've been doing culture, I always look back and think, would I be doing it if social media had been around? Because with social media, a story can start before you've had a chance to create the ending, yeah. If that makes sense. So for loads of stuff we did with Capital Culture, for example, that, if social media had been the way that it is now, that could have completely made it so negative when it was going really badly that you would never have been able to pull it back, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing about social media. It does change things, but I'm older now, so I don't mind it as much. So I think when you're younger, it affects you more, and you kind of get more nervous about what people are saying about it, about, you know, online. But then as you get older, you kind of go, I know how this is going to end. You've got to get to the ending.
I think as well that we've all trained ourselves that you guys, us at the guide, to kind of learn and how to accept that sometimes you get a bit of negativity and how to overcome that. And there's been loads of times, there's been times I've worked on your events, and I don't know, we've done River of Light or whatever, and there's been lots of negativity about a specific thing. You kind of know that years later, but if that happens, we just put this out to
I think it's that thing about having a long term. I've been really lucky to be here for so long, so you've got a long-term vision of stuff, and you know that in 3 years time you can't remember that thing that went wrong 3 years ago, and no one can really. So you've just got to believe that the positives outweigh the negative with stuff, and the story that we've told about culture in this city has completely outweighed anything that was negative about it. I think you just see it. You saw, you know, last night was St. Patrick's night, you couldn't move.
Yeah.
for young people in the city centre, that's great. It wasn't like that 20 years ago, and we forget that sometimes. We forget how far the city's come in the last 20 years. It's incredible, and it's beautiful, Liverpool, on a day like this.
It is. The sun is shining today on recording. It just looks stunning. There's something in the air in this city. But a lot of these events and stuff really do assist the city in terms of being what it is and what it's become today. We're going to go through some of the events in a sec, because I want to know lots about Capital Culture and more about Eurovision and stuff. For now, I want to talk about you and where it started for you, because it wasn't in Liverpool, even though you've lived here now for a very long time. Where did your journey begin, and when did you realise, I want to do this as a profession?
I don't think I've ever realised I want to do this as a profession. I think it's just happened. So I grew up in a town called Corby, which is in the Midlands, and my dad was from Liverpool. So there's always been these, and my grandma was from Liverpool, and she came back to Liverpool to have my dad during the war. So when they were being blitzed in Liverpool, she came back to be with her sisters here. So my dad was born here. So there's always been that storytelling about Liverpool when we were growing up. We had loads of cousins come and visit us and all of that sort of stuff. So when I went to university, I was the first person to go to university. It wasn't, you know, I was the first person to go. So this was the natural place for me. But it was very different when I came here in the 1980s. It was, but I came for the music as well, because, you know, I'd sit listening to Echo and the Bunnymen, you know, in my room in Corby going, and they were just like the best thing for me. And then suddenly, you know, fast forward to 2008, and I'm sitting in the arena with Phil Redmond watching Echo and the Bunnymen. And you just have to pinch yourself going, how did I get here? I don't know how I got there, really. I always wanted, I think when I came to Liverpool, I was doing a different course. I think I was doing drama and media. And then, no, I was doing media and English. And then the drama students always had so much more fun. But I'd never done drama before, so I'd never done anything like that. And then I wanted to direct, so I directed a big show at the Cathedral, and then I did youth theatre. So I went through a community art, so I went through quite a different route. And then I heard, when I was working in Speak, I heard that they were going to bid for Capital of Culture, and I just really, really wanted to do it. So I wrote to anyone saying, I'm here, I'll help, I'll do whatever. And that's kind of where it started.
So because you started just before the Capital of Culture journey?
Started working for, so I did loads of youth theatre and did loads of community arts stuff in Dingle and Speak and talked to work with kids who like were, you know, loads of them who were at the edge of everything and found a way to be creative. And, you know, I still really believe in that. I believe that creativity is a way through anything. And to work with them on it, doing drama. But what we'd done in Speak and what we'd done in the Dingle was a real model for, I thought, how you should do a Capital of Culture bid. You shouldn't just do it like a big marketing campaign. It should be about changing people's lives and all those great those great things that culture does. So I literally write to basically everyone. And in the end, Bob Scott, who, you know, people probably won't remember, but he led the Capital of Culture bid. He came to see me in this bunker in Speak, and I didn't like him at all. So I just said, I'm not doing it then. He came, and this big, you know, knight of the realm came to this bunker in Speak to see what we were doing, and he loved it, and he kind of got it really. And then I went to see him again, and then he said, can we just second you in? And I just like, yeah, absolutely. And I just loved working with him. I learned so much from him, and that's why I did the bid.
So what would your position have been then? Were you kind of...
I think I was in charge of community arts for Speak and Dingle and Toxteth with an organisation called Art Skills. Mm. And then when I came to do the bid, I was in charge of community participation. So I was in charge of getting people involved in the bid, not in a kind of like, you know, we'll take your photograph and tick you off a list way, but in a practical way. And we did loads of community projects to get people involved in it. And we did it very differently than any other city did. But that's the learning that I'd had from being in Speak and being in Dingle and Toxteth. Because if those people weren't going to be affected by it, why bother?
Why bother doing it?
Yeah.
It was funny because 2001 was when the bid was put in or started.
No, I can't believe I still remember this, so long ago, isn't it? So I started at the very end of 1999, and then we put the bid in 2003. It flew off in a helicopter from the bed by Bill Addy, actually, if he's listening. Okay. Yeah. Because he was
just see Bill as a Bill Addy,
flew the bid away. But you know, the bid was incredible for people who can remember it, because it was the first time, and the city was going through a difficult time then as well. You know, we had a new council, we had new political leadership, all of those things, and the whole city got behind it, and that's no joke. I mean, it was, I couldn't walk through the park without someone talking to me about it or saying how wrong we were doing it, or, you know, just having an opinion. And that wasn't the same anywhere else. And that was a real learning thing for me about how to bid for things as well. Like, if you've got, people have got to want it.
Yeah. And the bid paid off. And I remember that moment when it paid off. And you're right, the city did. Everybody knew about it. I was in my early 20s when, and me and all my mates, we all knew about it. You know, I worked in Radio City at the time, and there was such a buzz as we were building up to this massive, massive thing. I think Capital of Culture, European Cup, it was bigger back then.
They don't do it anymore because we're not in Europe. But it was massive, and there were 16 cities that bid for it. It was a real prize. And it was a real prize because Liverpool was just such a moment in time. And I always look back and think, if we hadn't won it, everything had to happen so quickly. So we had a stage to set for 2008. We had to be ready. So there was loads of trauma and dramas and all of that sort of stuff as what happens in these big emotional things in the build up to it. But the city had to be ready. And if we hadn't, we'd have hit recession. So would Liverpool won have finished? You know, if you talk to Grosvenor, they kind of, they'd like, well, probably not. You know, you would put things on the back burner because you hadn't got the confidence that you're going to come out of recession, but we had to be ready. So it moved the city really fast, really quickly.
Do you think that the likes of the Arena and Liverpool One and everything else that was happening then would have still happened, or was that happening?
I think it would have taken longer because we were sticking stickers on the Arena seats on the night of the opening. So it was by our tooth and nail that we got it on. But no, but would it have happened? Of course it would have done. Cities change and they don't have Capital of Cultures and they still grow. But if you remember, people have got long memories. If you remember the position the city was in at the moment in time, there was loads of ambition around it, but nothing had happened in Liverpool for years.
Yes.
You know, the city centre, you could walk from the pierhead to the Everyman or run, because it never felt safe. You know, and I used to work at the Everyman and run from the Playhouse to the Everyman because it just was a completely different city. And if we hadn't had that opportunity and the money that went into it, but a deadline, nothing like a deadline, you know, just getting it done for that opening wasn't, I mean, God, it took a Herculean effort from loads of people, but we did it. And I can't imagine the city if we hadn't done it. It would be very different, I think.
And the actual year we got to mention was a massive success. Some of the events from you know, the actual opening party on St. George's Hall, Plateau, the MTV Europe Music Awards, some of the artworks and installations, the Spider, the Giants. Tell us about that year for you living through it. I bet you were just, I don't know, non-stop for 12 months with you.
It was more like, you don't really enjoy it. That's the problem. I wish I'd enjoyed it more, I think, if I look back. But you don't, because it was very, very theatrical on the lead up to it. And we're using that word really guardedly. You know, loads of people walked off. There was loads of people left. Everything was in the media the whole time about what a disaster it was going to be. But I think there's something really brilliant, not brilliant about that, because I think probably we could have done without the drama. But you're really determined to get it right, because all through all the nonsense that was surrounding it, the programme was always really strong. The content of what we were trying to do, myself, Fiona Gasper, the rest of the creative team, the content was always really, really strong. And that is really important, because if your content's not strong, it's a marketing campaign. Mm. And it wasn't. And we knew it was brilliant. But you kind of had to go through that pain to get to it. And then Phil Redmond came in and he turned the narrative around, which is kind of what we needed at the time. You know, he stood on the steps of the arena and said, Scouse Wedding, if you don't want to come, don't bother, we're going to have a great time. And that just set the tone for the whole year. And we tried things. So the Spider's a really interesting one. We did the Spider rather than Giants at that point, because we wanted to show a different Liverpool. We didn't want it to be a story about an emotional story. You know, we wanted to show this thing that just appeared and was done about concrete and glass and just walked through the streets, and everyone had to make up their own story around it. And we did a load of that stuff. And someone said to me, it's like Glastonbury every day. They obviously really enjoyed it. I was exhausted by day four. But things like the opening, you know, I'd never done a major event of that scale before, and I produced the opening event. And I look back on it now and think, who let me do that? Really, you know, I was 30. But I did that opening. It was the first major event I'd done. That's bonkers. And it was really busy and it was great.
She says really busy. You couldn't move anywhere.
You couldn't move. We had to start earlier. Yeah, but no one was there. And typical of Liverpool audiences are really funny as well. They don't turn up till really late and then they go really quickly. So if you're an event organiser, you're standing there on an empty plateau at 6:30 in the evening, and they didn't even turn up till it was freezing, in fairness. But yeah. All of it. I'm quite glad there wasn't social media around. That's all I'm saying. But it was brilliant. And some of those images, I've still got that image on my wall, because Phil always says, and I think it's right, you felt the city's shoulders relax, because everyone suddenly knew this is going to be brilliant. Yeah. And then people don't want to miss out, do they, in Liverpool? So they came to everything as well.
Yeah.
The audience is just built and built and built.
Oh, we didn't just go to one of those events. Ticked them all off.
Yeah.
What, looking back on at the end of that year, what was the one moment where you thought that was epic, or was it all of it?
It was all of it. But I think, look, again, it's a long time ago, isn't it? But I think for me, one of the things I absolutely loved was a piece of work called The Rightful Owners of the Song, which was the Philharmonic working with pub singers. And it was just like, who owns music and who owns this music? And it was just absolutely gorgeous. And that for me was one of the real moments that probably, you know, 1,000 people saw, if that. But I'll never forget that, because that was a really brilliant kind of commission. And there's just loads. I mean, I look around that Superland Bananas. I mean, that was a really interesting one, because Fiona and I, so Fiona was like the arts producer and I was like the events and community, and we sort of split it like that. And this project called Superland Bananas went between us for ages, with her going, you do it. And I was going, no, it's an arts event. You do it. And in the end, it was kind of a mixture of both of us. And that, you know, that is like this. And then my child, who wasn't even born in 2008, made a Superland Banana and brought it back from school in 2000. You're just like that. That's incredible.
That is one thing that has really...
It's absolutely stayed.
It's just part of Liverpool now, isn't it? You know, it's an emblem of the city. By cuddly Lamb Bananas and everything. That's all because of 2008.
Oh, it is. And it's a mad thing to have done. And people probably was just like, why are they doing that? And And even now, we had a Ukrainian MP in earlier, and we gave him a Superland banana, and he just kind of looked at it going, thanks for that.
What is it?
Yeah. That's great. And we had to explain it, and then it got translated into Ukrainian, so it probably didn't translate very well. But it is very different, you know. But that was one of those things. And think, you know, the now mayor, Metro mayor, he made the biggest amount of charity we've ever seen in the city by selling the Superland bananas. People have probably still got them in their gardens.
Yes, I know a few people who have, to be fair. That year, for someone, you're 38 years old at the time, your career is well underway, but also just starting. What a learning curve. You must have come out at the end of that year and kind of in your head think, I've done everything I can do. I've gained so many skills. Did you realise at that point, I'm doing all right here.
No, because you never do. Because it depends on the sort of person you are. I'm always the sort of person that looks at, and I'm not like it now. I used to be, where you look at what went wrong rather than what went right. So there's that whole kind of thing about you always want to improve stuff, don't you? When you're doing something, but you never get a chance to do an event again. Mm. And that's what's weird. So you go, oh, wish I'd done this, and this, but you're never going to get that moment back. But I think for me, I always felt at the end of Capital Culture that I hadn't finished. That it wasn't sorted and it wasn't right. And for me, I completely believe that culture should be at the heart of regeneration. I don't just say it, I completely believe it. I've seen it change lives. I've seen it change this city. You know, I've felt it and I've lived it. At that point, I knew that if we didn't create a legacy, which we were literally doing as we were going through it, we hadn't got loads of papers written or anything, we wouldn't have the success of Capital Culture to look back on, and it wouldn't make a difference. It would have been a brilliant year. We would have spent a load of money, but it would have gone. So I really wanted to stay and do the legacy. I was really keen. And also I had kids here and my life's here. And I didn't want to go and do the Olympics or do another big event, because it was about the story of the city for me. It's always been about the city.
I presume, though, you fell in love even more with Liverpool during 2008. It must be hard to pull away from that then when you've been so invested in it for 12 months.
Yeah, I think so. Although it's hard living here as well. I'll just be really honest, because people know you, and then especially then, it's not so bad now. But at that point, especially when it was really bad on the build up to Capital Culture, people would talk to you on the bus about it. You couldn't go anywhere without people going, and they should do, and everyone's got, you know. Yeah. And so it's quite hard living here. No one else really lived here. People sort of got away from it at the weekends.
Right.
So I was like the only one who lived in the city. I think that's right, through the whole of it. And still do. So you feel much more of an attachment to it, because your neighbours are talking about it to you. It's not like you can't ever escape from the work that you do. You just can't. So, yeah, it was pretty... When it was going really bad with Capital Culture, when we cancelled Matthew Street, which probably still costs, people were literally going to say... I did do that, by the way.
Claire wanted to keep it.
Of course I did. But things like that, in the build-up to Capital Culture, that was pretty horrible, because if you live here, people are talking about it on the bus. They're not just... But then also you forget that no one's actually talking about it outside either. It's a learning thing as well.
But as well, what you're doing there is what you just said. You're thinking of the negatives. You're not
thinking of all that smiles that
you created, the memories that you made, the Superland banana becoming what it became, and you know, all them pictures we've still got in our mind, and as well, what you left, the imprint you left on the city. And you made us feel really proud and really... really kind of look around and go, yeah, our city's boss, our city's incredible. We were so proud as a city after 2008.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing to always remember.
It is, look, and I'm really proud of it. I'm not dismissing what we've done or anything, but I do think there is that whole, for me, it's like Giants. So when we did Giants once, I think we were just talking about it then, but someone said to me straight afterwards, so you had thousands of people who love Giants, but someone came up to me and went, they've left early, the Giants have left early. I'm like, they left on the tide. They went on the tide. But it wasn't advertised as that. And that comment stayed with me. So I remember ringing the leader or the mayor at that time and going, I'm really sorry, they left early, they left on the tide. And he just went, don't, that's ridiculous. Thousands of people are having the best time. Just pull yourself together. And I think it is that thing of, you know, always... It is always looking at the negative of it, but that's good because that means you're a perfectionist and you want it to be right for people. You don't want people to, no one does events for people to have a horrible time at it.
But they often don't, and you know, I've worked on many events with you, and there's more.
People enjoy them, don't they?
Yeah, they love them.
They like them.
We're going to skip forward to 2018. because that was a massive year for celebrating the legacy of Capital Culture. And what you've done in 2018 was arguably as big as 2008 with some of the events that we had and some of the things happening. Obviously, we had the Giants returning. There was tons happening that year. Was that important to celebrate, to kind of do it again?
Yeah, and I think it's because Bob Scott always said to me, you've got to manage the myth. And I think I took that to heart. So we're still talking about Capital Culture, you know, 20 years later. But it is important because it is part of the city's story. So it is part of how, you know, and now I guess when you look at 20, 30 years of Liverpool, you can trace the trajectory of this city with culture at the heart of it. You've got a whole case study in this here for it. So 2018 was really important for us to mark, but also we kind of grown up with it by then as well. So it wasn't as tap dancey, if you like, as and so full of energy. I mean, gosh, Capital Culture, it was literally something every day. Whereas 2018, we really planned what we wanted to do. Big events, big moments. So the Hugo Runtaneni statue at Liverpool Mountain, at the dock, things that would kind of create new images of the city as well.
We had things like Lost Castles, where the city region was brought in.
Yeah.
For me, the second Giants visit, was the second one, wasn't
it? Was the second.
Was the most magical moment I've ever had.
Oh, really?
I think it was because, this is personal, but it was the guide's first kind of official video we were doing for you. So to me, that meant everything. But that actual event, there was just something in the air. It was October, the sun was shining every day. It was just put together so beautifully, and everyone followed the story so well, from the kids to the nans to...
Well, there was a nan in it.
On the side of it. Yeah, there was. It was just beautiful. I thought it was a stunning, stunning event. And that's when we spoke and we got a few tears from you about how magical it was.
But you don't sleep. I mean, that's the thing. When you're doing these big events, especially Giants, you don't sleep during it. So you were exhausted by the end of it. So... The one I enjoyed most was the last one, because I knew we'd never do it again.
The last one is the one I'm talking about, sorry.
So the last one was that 2018?
Yeah, 2018.
Where was the grandma? The grandma was 2012.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. The last one. Oh, no, right, that's where I've been going wrong. God, that's a long time ago now, isn't it?
That's, yeah, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
I knew we'd never do it again, because I knew he was retiring.
Yeah.
And we kind of threw everything at it. And I think for me, there was a moment where we knew the girl was coming out, so we knew that, and so we stood by the outside the kind of army barracks where she was coming, and you saw the ripple through the crowd where she appeared, and obviously loads of people didn't know, so it was, and that was absolutely gorgeous. But I enjoyed that one. It I did enjoy that one. That I don't one. Think I enjoyed the rest
you get
of them.
What I mean, though? It was just
no, I absolutely.
The blue skies that made it.
And it was the end of something, and people knew that. And it's funny, because you meet people now who are younger, who've grown up with Giants, so their memories on their mantelpiece are all themselves with a Giant in, you know,
there's
in 20.
There's a picture there on my desk. You can see the two kids looking at me in a...
Oh, yeah.
So that's... I was on the boat in Canning Dock when she woke up on the Sunday morning.
Aww.
And the kids are watching on the laptop, on my brother's laptop, and they were just engrossed with the whole story for the whole weekend. And they still talk about that now. And I think they were like 3 and 5 years old in that photo.
But
that's what it did. It just created so many great memories, and kids were just obsessed with it, weren't they?
They were obsessed, but whole families came out, and it was just beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful. And in Prince's Park, because it was like really misty in Prince's Park as well when he was eating in Prince's Park. So kind of going down there and seeing that, and then watching him come up Prince's Park, coming up Prince's Avenue. But all of them, I've loved all of them. But I did know your 28. I can't believe that was the last one. See, I think it was like much closer than that.
But what's it like for an event like that when, you know, you've got a great, great team, and I've got to know some of them, and I mean, they're great. They're so passionate, but they're so on it as well.
Yeah.
And I love it when I see your team like out and about, and we'll have a little catch up or whatever. But then when you see them at work, they are so switched on. I'm thinking of Sue, for instance.
Oh my God,
incredible at what she
does. Don't mess with her.
Sorry, don't mess with her. But so professional. You know, they are on it. They are fully in control. So much work goes into something like a Giants or a Lymph or an event like that. Just tell us what it's like, you know, on the other side, the side we don't see when an event like that's happening.
I think because they all genuinely love what they do, and they all live here, and they love the city. They always want to do the best. So when things go wrong, which they do on the build up, it's more they hate themselves for it as well, because something's gone wrong. Does that make sense? It's a real passion for them. And they've all been with me a really long time, and we've got a very honest relationship. So it's always about I'm always like, just no surprises, just tell me everything and then I'm fine. It's when something hits you and it's a surprise, but they're so good, there is none of that now. So it's all in the paperwork. That's what you've got to do in events. Everything has got to be kind of logged and minuted, and every scenario, you think of every single scenario when you're doing an event. So stuff people don't ever see, that's going on for weeks before, you know, talking to building owners, if you're trying to put a shoe through a building, or you know, just random things you do. And then you've got to be able to take people on a journey with you as well, because that team, you know, especially when you look at Eurovision, they worked for, I'll probably get told off by someone for this, but we all worked for two weeks constantly, non-stop, up at 5, you know, not going to bed till 11, 12, if you sleep it, but that was like 11 days or of absolute full on. And they'll do it because they love it, because you're doing a job you love, but also because they're doing it for this place, which they all love.
And it's fun. And there's lots of people not from Liverpool in the team as well.
Oh,
there's loads of Scousers who just adore lots of great girls in the team, and they are all brilliant. And as you say, they've been there a long time. And it's worth putting out and saying these work so hard. And you don't realise some of the things, like the partners they've got to work with in the city, the police, the briefings, the security alerts, all that side of it is so important. And so they've got to get it right, haven't they?
Got to get it right, and also have a sense of balance with it as well. Because if you've got to always go worst case scenario and then roll back from that. Because if you did that, you'd never do anything.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of roll back from it. But they are just... I mean, I'd want any of them on my team with me ever, wherever I went. They're extraordinary. But they are the best in the business, and they've learnt their skill here. And I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of every single one of them, because they could go and work. And they were always asked to work anywhere. You know, my God, wouldn't you want one of them to come and run your event for you in anywhere in the world? But they choose to stay here, and they get the chance to do brilliant things as well, which is always what's important. And we always get a chance to do something brilliant.
Well, something that wasn't so brilliant was COVID. We got to touch on it because you did a lot. It was a first again for the UK here in Liverpool, because we were the first test events, the first proper testing centres, I think it was.
Yeah.
For me, the big moment was the festival in Sefton Park.
Oh.
And we were still kind of socially distanced, and you had to be tested to have got in there. And it was a weird, weird time, which we know was strange. We don't need to dwell on that. But it was a massive moment for not just Liverpool, but for the events industry, wasn't it?
It was. And we were on a roll with it, because we'd just done... So we literally took Angie Redhead, you know, again, just amazing. We took over from the military operation of mass testing. So we took over from a military operation, and the clue's in the word. You know, they ran like the military. And then we were like, okay, so we're an events team, we'll do all this. And then we did. So we treated the COVID test centres like event sites, you know, so they ran really well. We got all those up and running. And then because we'd worked so closely with government, we knew we wanted to open events up for the country. We were really passionate about it.
Jump in, by the way, and say this is the same team, by the way, that, you know, a year before we're working on Lymph or the Giants Music Festival.
Yeah.
The same team were running our
testing centres. Yeah, and volunteering. We did all the food parcels and did all of that as well. But the thing about opening the events for the country, you could have chosen not to do that. So it was very easy to not do it. But you just heard, we were really moved by, and I was really moved by the plight of freelancers, especially in the industry at that particular point in time. And you didn't know what was going to happen. So it's fine now thinking, well, we all opened up properly a year later. We didn't know that then. We didn't know whether forever we were going to have to be tested to go into, you know, environments where there was more than you and your family. It was unknown. So when we decided to do it, it was kind of, we wanted to trial opening events for the country, and I wanted them to do it with Liverpool, because I think we're really good at all of that. But it was a risk, and I remember sitting in a car park when we'd announced it, and the government always released stuff. You always knew what the government were doing, because they'd release stuff into the newspapers on a Saturday night to test things. And we'd worked all our way up to doing testing to open events with, but then suddenly it came out that it might be vaccine passports. And that was not what we agreed to. We absolutely wouldn't, you know, that wasn't what we agreed to. And the media went absolutely crackers. It was, and the comedy club, you know, all these people who we'd brought on this journey with us, trusted us as a city to work with them and the government, you know, to get this testing up and running and to open up the industry. But that was just a blow. And we had to deal with a load of stuff online that was really hideous, and it was quite scary. And I remember driving to pick up my shopping out of Deli Fonseca, because you were still doing all of that then, and phoning Martin Green, who I then ended up working with on Eurovision, because Martin Green, I've known Martin for ages, and he just went, "You've got to keep the faith, Claire. You were doing this. You're doing a really good thing." And I just went, "I'm a bit scared." And he went, "Just don't be scared. You are doing..." I'm getting a bit emotional, actually. He was going, "You're doing a really good thing. You've got to keep doing it." And he really talked me through it. And then I went to see the chief executive of the council at the time, and I just went, "I think we're going to have riots." You know, it just went ballistic. And so we're going to have riots on the... We've done that. You know, that's what we've brought to the city. And he went, "What are you talking..." He said, "We're doing a really good thing." But then you'd lost... Remember, it was COVID. We'd all lost perspective a little bit as well. But the stuff online was pretty horrible. But we were doing the right thing. And we stuck by government with it. We worked really closely with DCMS, who were amazing. Brilliant. And we had we had Matt Ashton, who's the director of public health. So we had brilliant support, but that is probably the hardest thing I'd done. I had a moment. It was Good Friday, so I was sitting in the garden outside, and we were just doing the final touches for this announcement that we were going to make around the events. And Sheffield, I don't think, could get their insurance. She had to get insurance, so we had to insure against people getting COVID. So the government had to sign insurance, and we said, "We're not doing it until someone signs it." So someone literally running around somewhere in government trying to get this. I mean, it was just amazing the way that everyone wanted this to happen. It was the snooker that happened in Sheffield, and they couldn't get insurance for some reason. So we said, "Well, can they use our insurance?" It was just all crackers.
Yeah.
But then at 12, I think it was just before 12 o'clock that night, we got our insurance signed off so we could do it. But it was literally to the bone where to get insured. And it was just extraordinary, the amount of people that were working on this. But loads of scientists. So you were dealing with Ian Buchan, but like proper serious, not that he's obviously a proper serious scientist, just to be really clear. But like these people in London, you know, you were in front of all of them talking about the ethics and everything that came with these events. So those partners that came with us on that journey, they should be absolutely congratulated, because it was bloody hard.
It was funny because no matter what anyone did, if they mentioned COVID in a post, if we mentioned as a media platform, we'd all instantly by some people be called, "Oh, you're supporting lockdowns." People just didn't understand. What people need to understand now is if it wasn't for those testing events and the way that Liverpool did things,
really properly,
we wouldn't have got out of lockdown as quick as we did. We wouldn't have... The events industry wouldn't have returned as quick as it did. It's, you know, there was so much positive that come out of those things that we did in Liverpool.
It was, and again, but you don't see it when you're in it. And I remember turning on the radio in the morning, Radio 5 Live was on, and there was these kids, I mean, they were kids, going, "We're going out for the first time, thank you." And they were thanking Liverpool Council. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And that joy that came out of the airwaves over that weekend when Circus over the nightclub.
Yeah.
And kids, remember, kids were going to nightclubs who hadn't even tried to get in one before illegally.
Because
they've been locked up for a year. So like your 16, 17 years, who would have had a go, wouldn't they, at some point, you know, try and get into... They just were going... So they had like three forms of ID. Mm-hmm. So the kids going like to Circus with like, "I've got my passport, I've got my driving license, I've got four different forms." Because there was such a... I mean, we locked young people up for a very, very long time. Yeah. And in Liverpool that weekend, if you were anywhere else in the country, you would have wanted to be here, because it felt... I was probably one of the most moved I've ever been at an event was when we opened. I was with Melvin from Live Nation, and we opened the gates of Festival in the Park, and they flooded through. I'm getting emotional. They flooded through in Sefton Park. And you just went, "Oh my God." You know, they were kids. And they did everything at that festival that they were supposed to do. People being sick, people drinking, all of that. But they also didn't know how to behave when they... It was just really extraordinary, actually. And I'm really glad we did it. But it was pretty... I had sleepless nights over that.
The hardest one you've done?
Is it the hardest one I've done? Yes, I probably think so, because there was so much riding on it as well. Because obviously you're dealing with an international disease that, you know, it's COVID.
Yeah.
So... There was a really odd conversation I had with the director of public health at one point, because there'd been a mix-up between Sefton. So there'd been an outbreak in a swimming pool in Sefton, actual Sefton Council, somewhere in Southport, in Sefton. But I was on the way to visit my mum, and I got a call. They thought it was Sefton Park. So they thought this outbreak had happened in Sefton Park. So there was a whole load of and I was like, oh my God. So I was trying to ring Matt Ashton, and he was like, I'm having my tea, Claire. What's wrong? And I was like, there's been an outbreak after Sefton Park. And he went, no, it's Sefton, the actual borough. So there's just things like that where you suddenly go from really high to really low really, really quickly. And if, you know, and people did get COVID from it, but they probably would have had it anyway. And then you had to track all, it was really interesting because you had to track who they were in the taxi with,
yeah,
who they went to.
It was bonkers times.
It was, and you can't really imagine it now, can you? You're thinking, oh my God. But everything, dealing with trying to get the even just things like getting the test associated with your ticket, so you couldn't give it your test, you take it to someone else. It was just incredible.
What's it like being, you know, you're obviously a creative, there's a massive event organizer within you, a kind of a lover of all things culture. What's it like, you've got that side of what you do, but also you're working for the council, for a local authority. Sometimes, and I've seen that can clash. What's that like? What is it like knowing that you've got to do things a certain way? You've got to follow the red tape. You've got to. Is that difficult sometimes as a creative?
Is it? I think I've probably been with them such a long time that it's. Yeah, and I think probably because in my world it is all about the paperwork. It's kind of what I said earlier. You've got to track everything you do. You've got to write notes. You know, so people always think, oh, they're really creative and da da da. But actually, behind that, you've got to be steel, because you are responsible for people, and you've always got to have that in your mind. So the council has gone through, as everyone knows, ups and downs like nothing else over the last, since I've been there. I think I've been through, you know, there's been about 5 different administrations. It's just changed all the time. Yeah. I think what I'm really proud of with the council is, no matter who has been in that chair, that political chair, they've all got culture. They've really understood it. Sometimes it's harder with executives because they come in and they need to learn it. So a couple of chief executives ago, I'm going back a bit, they thought events were quite small. So I remember talking about giants, going, you need to get your car in early. If you're going to come in, you need to do it. And they were like, oh, right, Claire, yes. Looking at me like, yeah. And then literally saw giants and went, I get it. The audio, it's different. I was like, it's completely different here. So, but yeah, and then look, I know it inside out. I know the council's faults. I know I live here, you know, and I get that. But I also know the strengths of the people that work for the council, and people do it because they love it. You know, a load of people I know who work for Liverpool City Council do it because it's the place where you can make things happen. And councils should be about making things happen. That's what they should do, you know. And I'm really proud of work for the council for all this time. Because it's given me the opportunities that I've had.
In terms of, obviously, a lot of these events cost a lot of money. We got to mention it.
Yeah.
I think it's money well spent, in my opinion. We should be spending more. I presume over the years that you've had battles with, funding for that. We need that fine. We need more money for that event. This event's costing X amount now, more than what we realised. I presume that's been difficult and up and down over the years.
Really up and down. And it always happens just before Christmas. So for some reason, the budgets always go just before Christmas. But really up and down, especially bizarrely straight after Capital Culture, because there was a thought that, well, we've done that now, so we'll move on to something else. And our budgets were much bigger then. But that was really hard, because that's like thinking, right, okay, we've got to do a legacy. We've got to keep building on this. Why would you not build on that success? But that was a whole period of negotiation around that. And that was really, really tough. And then from that point, we've got really good at proving the economic benefit. So people, even now, if you get a taxi, tax drivers are always the best. They know how much money it brings into the city. So the general public get it. And that means politicians generally get it. So, but the economic benefit, you can feel it in Liverpool. So it's not me just making it up. You know, you see it. You see it with River of Light. It's huge.
I can say we wouldn't be here as a business 10 years in without the Lymphs, the River of Light, the Giants. We just wouldn't. We wouldn't exist. And I'm one of hundreds, thousands of businesses that would say the same.
Yeah, and I think it's that constant narrative, isn't it? It's not a one-off. And I think that's what we've managed to do really well, is it's not just a one-off of, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, there's an event, and then someone else comes in and does another one. The narrative's always been really strong around this. So you know that, yeah, we might have a quiet year next year, but the year after it's going to be an absolute banger. You know that as a business. So you can cut... Eurovision was the best case of that.
Yeah.
People stayed open for the winter because they knew that was coming. And like the council gets the economic case for this. It's still hard because we're not what they call a statutory service, but it's hard to put, again, another something else, someone else said to me, Sue Woodward said to me when she was doing the bid, you can't put that genie back in the box now, because people love it.
Yeah.
So general public get it.
We expect it as well.
Expect it. And also they just understand it. It's not like they think it's a waste of money. We don't get any of that here. Other places do, because I've done some work in other places where it's harder.
Yeah.
Here it's really not hard. Hard if we stopped it.
I do think there's an element in Liverpool, and I know people might disagree with what I've got to say, but where we do take things for granted sometimes, and we take for granted of how much we've had for free and how good we've had it for so long. I remember when Lymph was ticketed, for instance, for that year when we had Nile Rodgers on, you could see him for £5. I was like, why are people moaning about this? This is unbelievable. But because we've got used to it, and it's no one's fault, I suppose, it's because we've just been so lucky to get so many great events for free.
Yeah, no one likes change. You know, I think it is that thing, isn't it? And I think that's the benefit of being here and being older and being here for a long time as well. So I'll take a really good example. Without Walls, do you remember we did that during COVID?
Yes.
Where we shut Castle Street, we shut most of Bowl Street, and we shut Lark Lane.
Yeah.
Oh my God, shutting Lark Lane. I went up there, I remember cycling up there and seeing those orange. Yes, where, yeah. Before it was pedestrianised. So basically, all we wanted to do with Without Walls, it was an idea that we had, because we'd listened to loads of businesses and they'd said, we need, like, the thought of one of the little ones on Castle Street, having to think about buying tables and chairs and taking the risk on that when they'd been shut for so long. I just thought, who would do that? You know, especially the independents. Let's sort out a fund where we buy tables and chairs for people. We'll do all of that as the city through our recovery funds, and then we'll close the streets off. Closing Lark Lane. Well, I should have known. I've lived there for nearly 30 years. But oh God, when I saw those orange bollards, do you remember?
I remember,
cycling down there with the orange bollards and all the neighbours basically hissing at me. I was like, this is awful. This is going to be a disaster. But then look at it now. And you try taking those planters off Lark Lane businesses now and telling them they can't have anyone sitting outside, or the resident, or, you know, you've just got to sometimes just hold your nerve with stuff. That's probably the hardest thing I've ever held my nerve with, though, because it would have been really easy to go, right, that's not work then. Let's take them all down and make everyone go up the road.
But then you wouldn't have the way it is.
You wouldn't have the way it is now. And yeah, then no more orange bollards. You know, someone will have warm one somewhere.
We're gonna talk about you in a second, because we still haven't done that, to be fair, Hogan. But we've got to talk Eurovision really quickly. That was the moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the dream. That was, and it couldn't have gone any better. And I'm not just saying that because we were in the thick of it, but it couldn't have. For the whole city, it was just electric, wasn't it?
It was fantastic from start to finish. But again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. You know, we were all, not just me, but, you know, Harry Doyle was a big part of this. Joanne Anderson, you know, there was a load of people who did a load of stuff. We had an interim chief exec called Teresa Grant, amazing. You know, we wanted it to work. And we were absolutely gritted teeth that it was going to. And the whole team, I remember Sue. So you talked about Sue. So Sue Lees rang me that night we won. And she was in a restaurant. She'd had it on her phone watching it. I think she's out with her husband. And she just rang me and went, I can't get out. I'm literally jumping on the turn. And I went, but Sue, this is going to be so much work for you. This is like basically cancel your holiday for the next 6 months. And she was just like, I'm in tomorrow. I'm in tomorrow. I'm up for it. The whole team, because I sent them all home because I thought we hadn't won. So there was me and Pip. You know, Philip, some of you will have seen her on the... She's the voiceover.
Pip is
the voice of Liverpool.
Yes.
But there was me and her in the office, and Robin, who did the bid with us, on a line. And the poor guy from the BBC had expected a whole group of people, you know, so they can go, you've got it, you did it. And I was just like, I can't quite believe it. And then we went downstairs and then Graham Norton announced it. But again, I thought they'd got it wrong. So I was thinking, what if they got it wrong and it's not us, it's going to be someone else? Because it was just brilliant. But we then started work Saturday afternoon and just had to get on with it because we had 6 months.
Well, we had a press call on the Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And everyone, and I'm not sure if you, I was hungover because
I wasn't. I drank two cups of tea.
Everyone was there to, because they were just buzzing with the news that we were getting Eurovision, like, and it sounds so normal now, doesn't it? But
then
it was like, it's like the biggest thing ever.
It needed the lift, didn't it, Liverpool, at that point? It just felt like it needed something. And Also, though, I had gone through every single cabinet. So we had to get the money through cabinet. So we had to do papers through cabinet. And I was just so convinced we haven't got it. I'm sure they all just think I'm like some sort of Svengali being really able to lie. Because I just went, it's fine, you've got to sign this. And it was the night before. So the night before we found out we'd won, we had to get it signed. We had to get the cabinet report signed. And I had to get commissioners to agree to it. It wasn't just the council. You know, you had to go through about 10 different people. And I couldn't get hold of one of the guys who worked for the commissioners. And I just suddenly started thinking, they're not going to sign it, da, 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 this is awful. If they don't sign it, we're not even in that last two chance because we haven't signed the contract. And I was sitting outside my house going, just texting him the whole time, going, can you please sign it? And then this poor lad rang me. He said, sorry, really sorry, my phone died, I was on the train. But I completely built up this whole story in my head.
Big scenario.
So no scenario.
I've learned through this podcast that you've got a little bit of anxiety, Claire.
Oh my God, that's the reason why I do my job well.
Yeah, well, that's actually a good point. I say that when I'm hosting stuff, I've got to get really nervous.
Oh yeah.
Hate every minute until I've done it.
Yeah, you've got to care. You've got to care. But you care about it, don't you? You know, so... I had got to the point with the BBC, though, where I was just like, you can tell them to sod off because I've had enough. Because when they kept asking us questions, they asked us questions till 4 o'clock on the Friday afternoon.
This is for the bid. We're not talking during Eurovision.
No, during Eurovision, there were some moments, we never fell out at all during the...
They were great.
Oh, I loved them.
And they loved being in Liverpool, didn't they?
Loved working with them.
It's said that it was the most successful and the best Eurovision the UK's ever hosted, and one of the best ever.
Well, the UK's hardly ever hosted it, to be honest with you.
But one of the best ever in history, and I certainly agree with that, but it's true, that, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we just did it.
So I think it's because we just did it really differently, and we did it the way that we would do events. We did a massive community programme, massive education programme. We went completely bonkers with it. But we listened to the fans as well. So we had this group of people who absolutely loved it, David Lloyd, for, you know, just absolutely were Eurovision obsessives. And we worked with them to get it right. So we worked with the fans to make sure the fan experience was going to be the best it could be.
Which it was.
Yeah, and we worked with all the businesses to make sure they all could really make the most of kind of doing Eurovision and all of that. And we were working, I mean, some of the extraordinary things that happened. I remember us being on a screen talking to the Ukrainian ambassador and the Ukrainian Minister of Culture with the great, so the Minister of Culture for the UK, Tim Davies from the BBC, you know, the great and the good were all in this virtual room. They were in a bunker. And you're just like, oh my God, you know, it's extraordinary. And it was an extraordinary thing we did. And if we got it wrong, there were so many, like creatively, if we'd gone to tap dancey and party-y, it would have been, that's not a right word, is it? It's not a real word. But if we'd gone too far, we would have lost Ukraine in it.
Yeah.
But they were at war. So you were trying to balance the creative of a country that's at war and wanted to tell everyone about the hideous stuff they were going through with the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah. Which is full of sparkles and
full of sparkles.
And it's a difficult balance, but I think we balanced it right.
Yeah.
You kind of told us how to do it as a city. And even the fact that there was blue and yellow everywhere.
Oh my God, it was extraordinary. And I think just even like, but the bit that where it summed it up is behind the Eurovision, but on exchange flags, we had the really big monument that was covered with sandbags and talked about everything that was going on in our sister city, Odessa. But then you'd walk around that corner and there'd be a big glitter heart that was lit up on the, it was crackers, really.
But that contrast was actually...
It's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's sadness and happiness and all those things. That it was the whole of life, I thought.
Eurovision, massive success. It was kind of where do you go from Eurovision? We've got another major event happening this year.
I can't remember how long ago Eurovision was. It's 2 years now, wasn't it? I'm still talking about it. Oh, good. I've got another 20 years.
No, God, easy. Radio 1 is coming to town.
It is.
It's a big, and there's a lot of people I don't think really understand and quite get how big this is. I went to the one in Bangor like 10, 12 years ago. It's like a little mini Glastonbury. It's huge.
It is.
The biggest stars. The lineup's incredible. How did you get it? You know,
well, we're doing this thing called, again, it's about us testing stuff. So we're doing this thing called Accelerator City, which is looking at how you decarbonize events. And it's really important because events are big polluters. You know, you travel to them, you get in the car to them, you've got generators on, you know, that are powered by oil, all those things. They are big, big, big problems for the environment. So we've got to work out how we do that better. And we're the first United Nations city to start developing that. And the BBC are really keen on that. So this is where we start to test things out. And you can't get a bigger event this year, unless you were doing Glastonbury, than the BBC One Big Weekend. So they're our partners on this. And that's what's really exciting about them coming here. And also, it's going to be fantastic in Sefton Park. It's a bit close to home for me. The neighbours.
You won't be sat outside in Nark Lane then.
Neighbours. But that park is made for major events. Yes. I mean, that's why the review field was built. But, and also the BBC, people haven't been to a BBC event before. They know how to do it really, really well.
Yeah. What is next and how do you plan and look for the next moment, the next big thing? Obviously, we've got our annual events like River of Light, which will be back and... But what you're always looking for something new as well, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think for me, that's where the city has got its kind of rhythm now. You know, it's got its kind of big thing it does in the summer, and loads of people do their own thing, like the Docks doing their own thing this year, which is brilliant. And then you've got River of Light for the autumn, that really quiet point in the autumn, no longer quiet, really, really busy, hugely busy this year. But then there's the opportunity with the city region, and I do mean that. I'm really excited about that because that's kind of different creatively. So if you look at Southport, for example, there's real opportunities in Southport to create a smaller destination, you know, to really pick after everything that happened with them over the summer, you know, absolutely devastating. But the town has got to kind of carry on. And how do you do that sensitively and properly and well and work with the community to do that? So that's really interesting for me. And because there's loads of brilliant people working there already, it's kind of what can the combined authority do to support that town get back on its feet again, because tourism kind of nosedived there. And then you've also got other places, like really interesting places for me, like Birkenhead. So Birkenhead Park and New York, you know, there's something properly exciting about that. Mm. So how do we bring artists from New York over to Birkenhead Park? How do we kind of get that Central Park, Birkenhead Park link kind of creatively rather than just through a UNESCO World Heritage Site, but, you know, how do we start to really grow that? And then other places like Prescott, you know, there's just stories everywhere, aren't there? But sometimes we don't know how to tell them very well. And I think what I'm really excited about the next few years is us being able to tell those stories as loudly as we've told stuff here. Hopefully, probably they'll all be really worried now, not with as many people.
but
as loudly and as interestingly, because everyone's proud of where they come from, aren't they?
Of course. And we've got some great areas right across the city region. And we've done it before there, when you look at like somewhere like Lost Castles.
Oh, I love Lost Castles, yeah.
You know, things like that. We've done it right across the city region and some great moments have been made.
I wish we'd not done Lost Castles now, though, because that's what I'd pull out of the bag now.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, I'd do it now. But we've done it before, so I can't do that. I was like, we should have built up to Lost Castles over the next 3 years, because it was just great.
It was a brilliant event.
Yeah.
What is the one global event that you would love to bring to Liverpool?
Oh, that's really hard, because, like, the problem with the global events is they're all quite sports, and there's a lot, you know, I love sports, but probably I wouldn't choose a sporting event if I was choosing it. Eurovision would have been one that I've always wanted. But I kind of always thought Eurovision was different than it was as well. I didn't realise it was just an event, an arena and a fan village when we got it. I did think it was like how we did it. So that's always I imagined it in my head. Yeah. I think I'd love, you know, everyone talks about South by Southwest, don't they, as a big music event. I like those things that completely take over the city and make where everyone's talking about them. So something like that. But I think we needed a country to start inventing our own again, because otherwise things get boring, they're in circles. And I think there's a real gap in the market, actually, for what are those city takeover events that are cultural, not sporting, because sporting's pretty easy. I mean, you can list them, the ones at Commonwealth Games, Olympics, the finals. Know, football finals, da da da. Yeah, but cultural ones are harder. And I think there's a chance for us to start thinking about what those could be for other places as well.
What is next for Claire McColgan? Where do you see your future?
I don't really ever look that far. That's probably another reason. I don't really look that far ahead. So I kind of think, as long as I'm interested in what I'm doing and getting joy out of it and make it getting laughing every day, because, you know, that I get to do that, it's brilliant, then I'm happy. And I think as long as I'm always being challenged, because nothing's been easy here, to be really clear. There's nothing that I've gone, oh, well, I can just forget about that and go home. Everything, there's always a problem in Liverpool to solve. There's just
more
with people. Well, it just makes it more interesting, doesn't it? I suppose. Nothing like a crisis to get through. But I think that, Yeah, so I think as long as you have permission to carry on doing brilliant things, that's all that's important, because this story's been part of my life. The story of the city's been part of my life for the last 30 years. I'm tied to it, really. And I hope, you know, hopefully I've done a good job for it. But then it's what's next. I've got to start thinking about what's coming up after me, you know, what the legacy is, who's next, you know, what are the new ideas, and making sure that we're open to that as a city, and what you know, what's next for this brilliant place.
There's lots more to come. There's a massive future to come, and a lot of that is down to the past 30 years, the past 10 years, you know, some of the things that we've done with you overseeing things, you know, at the council in Culture Liverpool. This podcast is all about people kind of knowing that they can do pretty much anything and nailing it in their field, whether it's business, music, sport, culture, whatever it might be. What would you say to anyone, maybe a young entrepreneur, maybe somebody who wants to get into events? What would you say to someone who just wants to do well and to be successful?
I think there's nothing like enthusiasm. You know, I'm really enthusiastic still. I'm not tired. You know, I'm always, hopefully, very, I haven't probably sounded it on this podcast, I probably sound like worst case scenario all the time. But I do generally, if there's a problem, I always try and think of ideas around it. And I think there's something, like, if you've got a brilliant idea, find those open ears for you and don't give up on that, because it might not come off, but you might have 10 ideas and one of them will. So I just think it's about always being really, really, really passionate, but not really passionate, it's the wrong word, like open to stuff and laugh it, you know. Don't take yourself too seriously is what I'd say. I don't
allow yourself to make mistakes.
Oh my God, yeah, I make them all the time. And also I'm always saying stupid things, you know. But being able to laugh at yourself is a skill as well. And Scousers are very good at that. They're very good at it. It's a defense mechanism probably more than anything else. But being able to do that. But just always being able to be enthusiastic, I think. There's nothing better than someone coming in with an idea to me. Nothing better.
You're now going to be flooded with amazing ideas.
I love people coming up with ideas. And hopefully we find places for them, you know.
Well, listen, just finally, your message to this city that you've looked after and created so many magical moments for us over the past 30 years, but also that have got behind all the ideas that you've come up with and you and the team have worked on. What would you like to say to them?
Oh, just thank you. I mean, I've loved it. I mean, it's felt like, what a city. You know, it's got a story around every corner, hasn't it? And it's given us the opportunity to do it in such an open way. And just thank you to the audiences that come out, because you couldn't do anything. I mean, imagine if you did Giants and one person turned up. And it was your mum.
See, she's the worst case scenario.
Exactly. No, but it is that thing. No, but I do that.
You've actually thought that thought in the past, though.
I have. What if I have. I've been the person standing there going, I always went, because I come up Princes Avenue and I was like, oh, the bus stop's busy. If they're not busy, I start to ring ahead. For football parades, I'm just going to mention football parades once. I've walked, come up Princes Avenue, and there's been no one at bus stops. And I'm just like, why are we doing this? There's nobody going to be there. And then you literally, like 2 hours later, go, no one can get into the city centre. We've got to now reroute all the buses. So it's a very yeah, all those people who waited at the bus stop, thank you and getting to things. Can Liverpool people get to things a bit earlier?
We do, because we're on a good spec.
You come really late, and it's always very nerve-wracking for anyone who's organizing it.
Oh, you mean we come last minute?
Yes, you come last minute. Yeah,
we do. Claire McCorgan, CBE, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
So many memories so far, and many more to come. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you.